Hi, Dave Lee here. On today's episode on My First Concert, would you pay for a used tissue from a performer? Yeah, maybe not, but what if that performer was Elvis and he dropped it on stage and you saw it and waited till the end of the concert to buy it? Would you do that? That's one of the many stories that Eric Escala joins us with from public television to share on his many concert stories on this episode of My First Concert with the Daver. Welcome to our show called My First Concert with the Daver, and with me on every broadcast is Breanne, our producer. Hi, Breanne.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
It's great to be with you. You say that now, wait till we're about 10, 20 shows in. But this is a podcast where we basically are remembering our first concert experiences. So you as a listener, I'm hoping at some point on this show that you can join us and share with other listeners your very first concert you attended, or maybe among the first. Not all of us remember that clearly. We remember significant events in our lives, and without question, for many, that's the first concert we ever attended. Whether it's the bands, the singers, the decade, the friends you're with, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a heartbreak, the beginning of a romance, just really a panorama of endless different memories. So we encourage your memories and an opportunity to join us on a future podcast. Today, I'm bringing in a good longtime friend of mine. Many of you have seen him on public television, Eric Escala. Double E, how are you?
I'm great, Dave Lee. What an honor to be here on the inaugural broadcast.
Well, you and I have chatted about these things before, many things music-related, so we're just going to let it fly here a little bit. But your first concert, Eric, do you remember what that was?
I do. 1970, Minneapolis Auditorium, Elton John. I think it was his second appearance in the Twin Cities. I think he had done a Guthrie show. And one of the sidebars of this, we came down from Duluth. I was in high school in Duluth, and we came down for the show. And they were building the IDS Tower at the time in downtown Minneapolis on the Nicollet Mall.
Oh my.
And they had the cross beam, the final beam of the tower.
A beam of significance.
A steel beam, humongous, because the crystal was going to be above the crystal court, I think.
Yeah.
And you could sign your name on the beam.
With a pen?
With a Sharpie.
Sharpie. Okay.
And so my name
is on the beam.
Is on the beam that's topped off the IDS Center.
So whenever I drive town, I'm going to peer up into the sky and I'm going to think of you.
Well, I certainly hope so.
You mentioned the Guthrie show. You know what's funny about that? So I went to see Elton recently.
How was he?
I've seen him a number of times. Best I've ever seen him. And it's kind of his final tour, right? That, without question, was the best. Now, my wife, years ago, when we went to see Elton, remember he used to say that he had the loudest show in rock and roll. Remember that?
He said it. I don't think it's true, but he said it.
He said it. Well, it was true for her because she had permanent hearing damage.
Really?
At Elton John, you're going, man, we've been to AC/DC, we've been to Metallica, and Elton John's concert affected your hearing a little bit, but on a high ends. So, yeah, they used to turn those amps up pretty loud, I guess.
Well, for me, Marshall Tucker Band at the St. Paul Civic Center Theater.
Toy Caldwell?
Oh, my gosh, was it loud. I mean, you got sick to your stomach.
Really?
Oh, my heavens. They had those stadium amp set up but it was in the theater. It wasn't in the big arena. And it was, they just overpowered everybody. It was hard to handle. They were great, but it was loud.
So heard it and a love song hurt.
Yeah. And that flute part was high piercing flute part.
The flautist. So, okay. Another nugget, that flautist. So I went over to Dakota to see Firefall.
Rick Roberts.
Yeah. But the flautist for Firefall, he guitar player, plays the flute, does all of that stuff. He was Marshall Tucker's guy. And then he came back to, I think it was Firefall. I got to sit and think about that for a minute. But anyway, the guy was, and he did a little thing, and he was really good.
Josh Barnett, I think, was one of the guy's names. Rick Roberts, who had been in the Flying Burrito Brothers, and our good friend Rick Shevchik, his claim to fame is standing at a urinal in Max's Kansas City in New York City, taking a leak right next to Rick Roberts. I mean, take that to the bank.
There's a brush with greatness.
Absolutely.
So anyway, you go to see Elton John.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we thought Nigel Olsen was his drummer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was going so fast, we thought he had four drumsticks. Two in each hand.
He's unbelievable.
Going nuts.
He was drumming at the other night.
Was he?
Yeah.
Davey Johnstone, is that the guitar player?
Yeah. So his original band members, a lot of them still with him. I didn't mean to, you know, get off on this tangent, but so I guess he and Nigel, he talked about it, where they went off just a tube and traveled the world and just did a two-man show for a while, which I didn't know. But the reason I bring it up is because Elton referred to his Guthrie appearance at his concert when he was here.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, and he's talked about his appearance at the Guthrie. So I looked up the set list, and I couldn't find the entire set list, but I found a couple of songs. I think he sang Your Song at the Guthrie, and then he did a cover of a couple of people, I think, at that time. But anyway.
Well, and the Rolling Stones, when they were just here, was it October?
Whenever it was. I think so.
As we record this, October of 2021. Was that right? Or was it in the first of the year?
No, I think that's right.
Well, anyway, they put up on the screen Excelsior Amusement Park.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Where they had played in 64 or 3.
Little Jimmy.
Yeah. Little Jimmy was the proprietor of the park? Or?
No, Little Jimmy was a young man who lived over there. And then Mick ran into him allegedly, and they shared a cherry Coke, was it?
Well, it's in the lyrics of the song.
You can't always get what you want, but you get what you need. That allegedly came from Little Jimmy.
Springsteen has a couple of interesting bits. One of them is I was at the St. Paul Civic Center when they did the Dancing in the Dark video.
Yes.
This would have been 80s.
84, maybe? 84?
They're doing it for MTV.
Summer of 84, does that sound right?
That sounds right. And so he's doing Dancing in the Dark, and he pulls out of the audience a young woman with short haircut and a white T-shirt.
Yeah, kind of a muscle shirt, yeah.
And we're thinking, man, this is incredible, bringing that young woman up on the stage, and they're dancing, and the band's going, and they finish up, and everybody's just going nuts because Bruce is incredible that he would bring this young woman up on stage. And then they do it again. Same woman, same hand down in front, pull her up on stage. So we come to find out that this was the video for Dancing in the Dark that played on MTV.
Done by, was it Brian De Palma that did that, the director?
Probably was, yeah.
So he wanted different angles, probably. Wow.
And I think in the video, I don't think Nils Lofgren even knows the chords to the song. He's kind of...
Well, you know what? We'll talk about that. You know, our next podcast, let's bring that up. Let's delve into that show with someone who was there like you were up in the front row. That'd be interesting. So you were at that show. Where were you sitting for that show? Did you have a good view of what was going on? Or were you totally confused as you watched it?
We had a seat, which was good. And we were up on the side. And this is after the days of festival seating.
Yeah, where you kind of just showed up.
Did you have festival seating at the Fargo Dome?
Oh, my gracious, yeah. More than once.
So we're there for the Allman Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And we get there at about 9:30 for the 8 o'clock show.
9:30 a.m. for the 8 p.m.
Yeah.
show.
And it is hot. And the sun is boiling down. And the guy right behind us, we're about 6th or 7th in line. And the guy right behind us is like, I mean, he's got Confederate flag shirt and flowing hair and drugs and booze. And he's so fired up. You know, he's traveled the country to see the Allman Brothers. We get in there. We race. You know, you're running. It's totally,
sure.
Totally unsafe. We're running into the floor of the St. Paul Civic Center.
It was like the day after Thanksgiving sale.
Yeah. Black Friday. So he sits down next to us. And we've been with this guy all day. And he's fired. So this is like, 6:30 for the 8 o'clock show.
Yeah.
And he's fired up. And he's talking to everybody. And he's drinking and smoking. And they come out. Memory of Elizabeth Reed.
Yep.
Yeah. The guy passes out. People were walking over him to get to the merch table.
But he was there.
But he was there.
Okay. So your brothers, too, were great concert goers. And I know I was talking with George, who works down in television in Augusta, Georgia. But he was—he helped protect Elvis, didn't he, when Elvis was up in Duluth?
He discovered some of Elvis's diet books backstage that women had brought Elvis because he was a little beefy.
At that time, yeah. A little later in his career.
But he just told me this story the other day.
A little beefy.
I said, George, I'm on with Dave Lee in this concert podcast. You got to help me. He says, I got one for you. After the show, this is 1976. after the show, George is on stage kind of cleaning up and helping get the stuff down from the stage. And a woman comes up to him and points at the right up front. This is after the show. And George said, there's a Kleenex on the stage. And I said, you sure it wasn't just one of the scarves that Charlie Hodge put around Elvis's neck? And no, you Kleenex. Woman comes up. I'll give you $5 for the Kleenex.
$5 is pretty good panka back in the day.
Yeah, when it was $1.50 an hour back in the 70s. So, and George made no claims that Elvis had mopped his brow with this Kleenex.
However.
But for $5.
Yeah, $5 is $5.
So it was a cherished keepsake for that woman.
Probably still has it.
In a frame.
Okay, I just was at Graceland just a little while ago. Drove through Memphis and said, I got to go to Graceland. So that was kind of a fun experience.
Well, we did a show from the driveway of Graceland.
For the bowl game. What was it? Independence Bowl.
Liberty Bowl.
Yeah.
You know what the house band at the Rum Boogie Cafe, the lead singer, said? Mm-mm. That Graceland is what happens when you spend $1 million remodeling of Kmart. Every exit at Graceland empties into the gift shop.
Isn't that ironic? That is just strange. I can't believe it.
Coincidence.
I can't believe it. Yeah, there's nobody there the day we were there, just four people. So we had the mansion kind of to ourselves, but it was fun. You know, once you see the jungle room and once you see all these things that, you know, Mark Cohen was singing about and walking to Memphis. And I mean, it was just,
that's cool.
It's pretty cool, whether you're a big Elvis fan or not. Brianne?
Memphis is one of my favorite places I've ever been, actually.
Really?
And people kind of look at me strange when I say that because there's, you know, Nashville and other, I guess, more glamorous places
right.
You could go. And this was 10 years ago. I think it's kind of fallen on some difficult times in the meantime. But one of my biggest regrets is that I did not go to Graceland. We thought about it, but the traffic was just a little too bad that day, and we didn't go to Graceland. I'm still regretting it.
Yeah, and this would have been
2009-ish, I guess.
Yeah, I was driving through in January, and weather was crisp, but it was no snow on the ground, but it was awesome. Just being the only ones there, just kind of...
It's a good time to go there.
Doing what you want to do.
Well, you can't beat Memphis for a three-day weekend. I mean, it's fantastic.
Well, I stayed at the Peabody. You go see the Duck March, which if you've never seen it, find out about it. The
classic.
People at the Peabody are fantastic. Then we're going to walk. I want to walk down to Sun Studios.
That was my next point.
Did you get over there?
Oh my gosh, it was like a religious experience when I went there. It's so amazing. You can really just feel everyone who's come through those doors. And I mean, it's been from Elvis to Jerry Lewis to Johnny Cash to Carl Perkins. And it's just, you can feel it still there. Even U2 is recorded there.
Yes. Yeah. In that old.
Yes.
Worn out studio.
Yes. And that was, they used it for Walk the Line as well. They really kind of used the original recording studio for that. So when you watch that it's the same room that they all recorded in.
Yeah. It's a religious experience.
I loved it.
But that recording equipment is so ancient, nobody living could operate that stuff.
Here's the sad part of what you've just said. So we're in there we're in the upper level where they had the radio station. And apparently if that guy that was playing his records didn't like your record, he'd say something about it in the air and pretty much you were done. So anyway, they're explaining everything and I'm in the room and I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh boy. And my wife said, what's wrong? I said, I could actually turn all this stuff on and I know how to run every piece of equipment in here. And it's in a museum. little sad. But it was a great trip and Sun Studios is just a little hole in the wall. But man, was that fun! And the history out of there is B.B. King,
right?
Oh, it's amazing,
and many others.
Did you run afoul of Kiss when they stopped in Fargo back in the day in the '70s?
No, I ran afoul of. Well, go ahead.
Well, I worked at Channel 3 in Duluth, mm-hmm. CBS affiliate, for 9 years in the '70s, and Kiss comes to town, and Mark Ginsburg, who's about 4'11", our photographer, goes up to the airport to get them coming off the plane, because at the time, the big deal was they would never be seen in their makeup.
Right.
Without their makeup.
Right.
Well, he gets them without their makeup.
Oh, my. Wow.
And then Big John, their roadie, the chief roadie for Kiss, who just recently passed away, he confiscates the film at the airport. And then...
So the old roll of film, right?
Yeah. 16-millimeter film.
Man.
Then they do the show at the arena. George, my brother George, is backstage. He makes fun of Kiss for being so uptight about their makeup. And the same Big John pushes him against the wall.
Oh.
And Big John, the roadie, just died here in the last couple months, and George said, I'll dance on his grave.
I did get pushed down at a concert one time. So we're at the Midnight Special. Now, Brianne, you don't remember the Midnight Special, I bet, do you?
Sounds familiar to me.
Wolfman Jack did it. You can YouTube some of the videos, certainly. Wolfman would do his segments apparently somewhere else. So he wasn't there. And it wasn't a concert. It was, let's tape this number. Okay, break. Meet your neighbor. Talk to your neighbor. Okay, we're going to tape another show or concert. Tape an art concert. Song. Another song. So the night I was there, I was with two of my buddies. We hopped in the car. All three of us were in college. We just hopped in a car and we drove, down to Texas, drove over to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and into Tucson, and over to, and then eventually we're just, irresponsible. There's certain years of my life I wish I could redo, and that was part of it. But anyway, so we end up in Los Angeles, and one of the guys has an aunt in Hollywood, so we stay with her. We go to the Tonight Show. Of course, as a huge Tonight Show fan, we're just influenced by it at that age. Then we get out of the Tonight Show. They taped it at 5:30, as I recall. So at 7 o'clock, we're walking out, and these young ladies come over, and their interns at NBC say, hey, where are you going? I said, really? They said, well, we're taping a show over here called The Midnight Special. I said, you're kidding. I love that show. Well, come over. We need audience members. So the three of us go over there, and the only requirement was sit on this concrete floor in front of the stage, which was just built for TV, so it wasn't very, nice. Free ticket. And all you do is put your hands over your head and clap so that the cameras can see your hands up in the air, because that's kind of so it looked like a lot of people were there, but there weren't many of us. So that night, believe it or not, that performance was George Benson was a host. I got to sit and think about this. Van Morrison was there. Carlos Santana was there. Dr. John was there. Tom Scott was there. Etta James was there. And I don't know who I'm leaving out. I mean, we had no clue, right? So the last number that they recorded was going to be everybody together, and they're going to sing Moondance. And so Etta James is off to my right, and she's walking up these chintzy stairs, like a set of 4 to 5 cheap stairs that they put up against the stage. So if you had to use them. Well, Etta was why I needed to walk up those stairs, and she was struggling a little because it was so flimsy. So being a man of valor, of course, hardly, but I ran up and I said, hey, I put my arm on, can I help you? And she said, oh, that's great. She grabs my arm. I get her up about 2 of the steps. Security comes in and forcibly says, get away. And then they throw me to the concrete floor. Wow. I mean, it wasn't just to go back to your seat. It was, boom, sit down. And so they helped Etta James up the final 3 steps or whatever it was. She gets up the stage. So now you got all these people gathered. They're going to perform. And she stops before they start. She says, excuse me. And she walks to the front of the edge of the stage where I was sitting, and she says, young man, I want to thank you anyway. That was so kind, and I so appreciate it. So I turned to my buddies and said, Etta James just talked to me. And what did they say? Who's Etta James? But what a show. And I think if you go to YouTube, you could still probably see that performance.
I thought she was going to say that she was going to get a restraining order.
That was my security story. Sorry, I wandered off.
Rush opened for Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh, my.
Did you see that one in Fargo?
No, I don't think I did.
And so Rush opened.
I may have had a few where I was like that your buddy at the concert that missed most of the Allman Brothers.
Anyway, this is, Rush is big time.
Oh, Geddy Lee, yeah.
And Alex Lifeson, the guitars.
Yep.
After their set, they are their own roadies. This is back in the 70s. Early 80s?
Wow.
They had their performing, shirts on. They come out, they put on sweatshirts. Lifeson and Lee come out, and they move their own equipment. They didn't have a roadie.
That's awesome.
And you would think,
how can you not like them if they're doing their own equipment?
Yeah, a couple of Canadian guys,
Yeah.
Isn't that so? And Alex Lifeson ended up playing golf at Hillcrest. My old
sure
yeah when they were in town when they were the headliners obviously later on.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty good. Rush moving on equipment.
Did you get the fake Fleetwood Mac at your place at Fargo?
No. Well, if we did, I wasn't there.
Danny Kerwin and Bob Welsh had split.
Oh, Bob Welsh. So he was in that group, you mean?
I think he was in the fake group, and there were lawsuits for years, and Mick Fleetwood was suing these guys, and they were counter-suing him.
Didn't he give us Sentimental Lady? Was that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I just wondered, because that was kind of controversial when they came through.
Yeah, and Peter Green was a member of that band at one time, too.
Do you remember which guys split? I think their manager, a guy named Davis, his last name was, he split off a fake Fleetwood Mac.
I don't remember that. But, getting to that, though, Eric, with your coverage at the state capitol, there was a bill at one time that wanted to stop these fake bands, right, that had not even originals in the band, but they had the name. Tell us about that experience.
Well, what's the fellow from Shawnee, Bowser?
Bowser. Get a job.
He was all over the country doing these because I guess there was a fake, there were fake Shawnee, there was fake The Platters and all of those doo-wop groups from the 50s.
So he came in?
He drew a huge crowd at the Capitol and great testimony. I think they passed the bill finally that I think they were playing at some of the casinos around, these fake bands that had no original members, and they were ripping off the public because they weren't anywhere near the original members of these doo-wop bands.
It's great talking about music, about concerts, about memories. You know what else it's great to talk about? Something that a lot of people are buzzing about, reducing carbon emissions. It's good for everyone. But how do we reduce emissions while also meeting our world's increasing energy needs? Using propane is an excellent way to reduce emissions while meeting energy needs today. Propane is a clean, non-toxic energy source that helps reduce carbon emissions right now. In fact, propane's carbon intensity score in Minnesota is only 80. Grid electricity in Minnesota, including wind and solar, has a much higher carbon intensity score of 136. Who knew that using propane was that much cleaner than electricity? Plus, the abundance of propane and growth of renewable propane means it can be used for generations to come. Millions of Americans rely on propane to heat their homes and businesses, fuel vehicles on road and off, and much more. Making propane the right energy right now. Find out more about what propane can do for you and the environment by going to propane.com.
At the Capitol, if I recall right, you had a very insightful and challenging question for Steve Miller. Steve Miller was at the Capitol one time.
This is during the nuclear waste controversy at Prairie Island. Bonnie Raitt comes in.
One of your favorites.
I asked her to dance at the Union Bar.
And what'd she say to you?
No, thanks. I had a cardigan sweater on, and it wasn't as hip as it could have been.
No, that in that room, that probably wasn't the thing to wear. But we learned from our experiences.
Yeah. So she comes in to the Capitol to testify against nuclear waste.
Yeah.
And security guys wouldn't talk to anybody, gave her testimony, and bailed. Steve Miller's there like the next week. He comes out, sits on the steps of the Capitol, and answers every question. He couldn't have been nicer. So I said, Steve, before we start, what is the pompatus of love? He says, well, it's a nonsense word. It just had enough syllables to fill in the melody. It means nothing.
Oh, God.
So then we got to the less serious issue.
And Cher showed up at one point, didn't she?
Cher was campaigning for Al Gore.
And you were a Cher fan.
Who wasn't?
Yeah.
I think she had had some work done.
But she was good.
Oh, and had her talking points down and was very, environmentalist and social justice. And, of course, a lot of it was environment because Gore was like Mr. Environment.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and she drew a, as you can imagine, we're watching a couple of guys debate local government aid on the floor of the House. And then all of a sudden, here comes Cher. Big time.
Yeah, let's break this up a little bit. Yeah. And now for something completely different. So among other concerts that you witnessed.
Gordon Lightfoot.
Mm-hmm.
This is after he wrote The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Okay. Written about kind of the area you grew up in.
This is the shipwreck. They left the Superior Harbor, got in the November storm, sank 29 men on board the Edmund Fitzgerald ore carrier, killed. Many of the crew members' families lived in Duluth and Superior. And he came out and he did the song. He started to do the song, halfway through the show or whatever, and he gets booed. Family members thought he was making money off The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. He stops the song. He goes over to the side of the stage and picks up a magazine. And he says, I got everything I knew about the Edmund Fitzgerald from this article in Newsweek. And I didn't do it to make money. I did it to create a lasting tribute and memorial to these brave men. Well, the place went nuts. And they loved him after that, but it was tense. He stopped a song in the middle.
Why? So he kind of must have thought, well, this could possibly happen?
I think there'd been a story in the paper that there was going to be some people angered by the alleged profiteering off of the song, off of the tragedy. But that was dramatic.
And then he captures the crowd at the end.
Oh, yeah. They loved him after he talked about the memorial to these brave men.
Yeah. Well, good anticipation on his part as well that he would do that and then be prepared for it once that would happen.
Neil Young played solo acoustic at the Orpheum.
Mm-hmm.
And I splurged. I got the right down front and then the meet and greet backstage. And so I walk up to Neil Young.
You got your question ready?
Oh, I'm all set.
Is it like one question or take a picture with me and
no,
keep
no,
moving?
No, he was just mingling. It was, okay. You know. And I said, Neil, you don't know this, but we've spent a lot of time together.
That creeped him out a little bit.
And he has these piercing gray eyes. And he looks at me and he says, thanks, man.
That's all it takes. And you remember it forever.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if they have any idea. Whatever they say, we kind of take it to the bank. Neil Young, you and I went to see, was it Crosby, Stills, and Nash? Or was it Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young at the Xcel Energy Center shortly after it opened? They did a half-house show.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them many times.
No, maybe it was just Crosby. It was Stephen Stills and maybe David Crosby.
Wasn't Crosby it? And Nash, maybe.
Yeah.
Because they sang together.
Yeah, it was Graham Nash.
Yeah, they had a lot of permutations come through. And they got political one show. I remember, I was at the St. Paul Civic, was it the XL, maybe? And it was right during the Iraq War, and I liked them, so I went to see them. And there was a guy, lobbyist from the Capitol, a couple of lobbyists from the Capitol near me. And I didn't know what the set list was going to be, but David Crosby comes out and says, we're going to do every protest song we ever learned.
And they knew plenty.
And it was, you know, liberal, social justice, anti-war. And I'm kind of going, as a neutral reporter, I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's the trouble when a concert turns that way. I don't care if you agree or disagree. I'm not sure you go there to hear that part, but it happens more than you would think.
I double dated with Sid one time at a concert.
Come on.
Sid Hartman.
Sid Hartman, of course, the iconic sports writer. You and I both worked with him for 30-plus years,
yeah.
So we can pretty much say anything. I think we have that license.
He asked one of the front office women out, and in a horrible lapse of judgment, she said yes.
Front office of what?
CCO.
Oh, okay.
And then I went with Kathy Werzer, and we went to the Decathlon Club for dinner.
Wow. Romance.
Then we went to see Neil Diamond at the Met Center.
More romance.
So the next morning, I'm on with Sid at 6:40.
Wait a minute. Brianne, if this had been you, would that have been a good night out?
Absolutely. I love Neil Diamond.
Yeah. Romantic night, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Sid's... Now,
the Decathlon Club burnt down.
Well, I mean, talk about too hot, right?
Yeah, just got them erupted into flames.
Hotter than a pepper sprout.
Well.
So the next morning, I'm on with Sid at 6:40 a.m. on WCCO radio.
What time did you guys get home that night?
Well, you know. I was young. And
it didn't matter.
Nah. So anyway, I say, Sid, it was incredible being out with you last night on a double date. And he said, well.
he wasn't happy you brought it up.
So I said, but it got a little out of hand when you were waving your sport coat over the over your head yelling, Kentucky woman. He hated it.
Well, for some folks that don't know, Sid was a close friend of both ours, very close. But he could get cantankerous. So I get a call from one day at home, and my buddy Jimmy Erickson and I are going to go see Paul McCartney that night at the Target Center. And I get a call, and I think the show was 8 o'clock probably, I'm guessing somewhere in there. And so I get a call from Sid at home. So, what are you doing? I said, nothing right now. Well, let's go to dinner. And we would go to dinner a fair amount. But a random call at... in the middle of the day, I want to buy you dinner at Murray's,
wow,
restaurant in downtown Minneapolis. And I'm going, okay, so if I go down there at 4:30 and eat, then I could finish and I could go, I will. Okay, so we get down there, we sit in his booth, you know, the plaque is still there. And as we're eating, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I don't know why suddenly this is a random, I want to buy you dinner sort of thing. But towards the end, he says, well, how was your meal? I said, well, it's always great at Murray's. He said, well, why don't we go over to that Beetle Guy concert? And of course, I'm going.
How old is Sid at this point?
95. I said, you know, the greatest response of all time. Oh, what Beetle Guy? Like, you know, I already had my tickets. I'm going with Jimmy. I don't need to, you know. Hey, you know that Beetle Guy? I said, Paul McCartney? Yeah, that guy. We're going to go see him. I said, yeah, I'm going to see him. Well, I'm going with you. I said, you can't go with me. I have two tickets. I said, Jimmy's got one of them already, and mine's at Will Call. I said, so we don't have. Well, I'll sit with you. I said, we're sitting up front. You can't just come and take an extra seat. I said, it's not festival seating where you just stand. Everything's reserved. And I said, we are up front. We've been waiting to see the show. That's okay. I'll get it. I know everybody. I'll get in there. I said, you can't sit there. And then he says, by the way, here, I'm paying for the meal. He flips out a couple of Murray's certificates. I said, this is how you're paying for the meal? Just take the certificate. So we get done, and he says, let's go. And now I'm going, well, I don't know. You know, I'll walk over with him. And, you know, as we walked that, two and a half blocks, whatever it was from Murray's over to the Target Center. I mean, anybody that's smoking, who he does, he sees them, they're smoking. Catcher. Doesn't know any of the people, you know. And everybody pretty much smiles because it's Sid. And the police are parked up on the sidewalk for crowd control. Hey, look at the way you guys park. And the guy's just insulting him, and they're just looking. And it's Sid.
Yeah.
Sid could say anything to anybody, but he still doesn't have a ticket. So I says, what are you going to do? I said, you don't have a ticket. I got to go get my ticket at Wilco. Don't worry about it. I said, I am worried about it. We're going to go sit in the suite. I said, I'm sitting with Jimmy. We're going to the suite. I said, we don't have a suite. We have a suite. I said, their station does not have a suite. Trust me, Lee, we got a suite. So we walk over to the one gate where you get the VIP, or the kind of the VIP entrance on the final one, called VIP, but it's kind of whoever the people that have passes or whatever. So walk over there, and of course, security says, hey, Sid. Hey, Dave, come on in. No tickets, no nothing. Waltz right in. I said, now what are we going to do? We're going to go up to suites. I said, there is no suite. And it was kind of like my, you know, our dad, right? You're just kind of always doing that sort of thing. So we go up the stairway. We get the escalators. We get up to the suite level. We walk in, and the guy says, how you doing? Said, good. Where's our suite? You don't have a suite. Lee, we don't have a suite. I said, I told you we don't have a suite. And anyway, then our general manager comes walking by,
yeah.
Shannon, and he sees her, and he says, hey, we're sitting with you. Great. So she's in a suite with somebody, and she just brings Sid and I with her.
What about poor Jimmy?
Poor Jimmy had to watch a show from the front row by himself, where I was thinking the whole time, I could have been down there, right? So then Sid sits up in the front with our general manager. I'm in the back with her husband, Tom, in the back of the suite, which is fine. And McCartney starts a show. He does about 5 songs from the new album. You know, none of which I know. And then he does one of the, you know, one of the classics. Now he's going to go into a roll of Beatles hits, just in his hits, right? And this Thomas says, wow, that's amazing. He's 95. He's at a concert. He says, Wednesday, how long will he stay? I said, 7 songs. You know that? I said, trust me. I said, just count on it. 7 songs. So the 7th song starts. So we've been through 5 ones that we don't really know. Now the hits, now I can just, now it's going to be just awesome, right? Gets the 7th song, comes what? Lee, let's go. I said, where am I going? You give me a ride home. I said, yeah, we don't live on the same side of town. I said, that's like I have 45 minutes out of my way to an hour. We're going, you got to take me home. And I said, how did you get down here? Don't worry about it. You're taking me home. I said, I'm not taking you home. I said, he's just starting to do the hits. I want to see McCartney do the hits. Let's go. I said, I'm not going. He says, I'm 95 years old. Give me a ride home. And I looked at him, and I said, let's go. You're right. You're 95. It was just that's part of the Sid experience. So I saw that's McCartney great. For 5 or 6 songs.
Dark Star and I and Sid are at the Twins game.
Mm-hmm.
And Sid is mouthing off. And ladies and gentlemen, to perform the national anthem, international recording star, Meatloaf. Sid keeps talking. but he's kind of looking, you know. And so Dark says, Sid, shut up. We're going to hear Meatloaf. You want to hear Meatloaf, don't you? Sid goes, F Meatloaf.
Oh, well, we're at the Packer game. It's Dark, me, and Sid at the old Metrodome sitting back by the popcorn machine. So if you're standing back by the popcorn machine on the lower level of the press box, you can't quite see the whole field. You kind of have to move up to where, obviously, your seats are. But we're all standing there, of course. They're shooting the breeze, and I'm absorbing everything as much as I can. It's just part of the charm of hanging out with Sidney was just listening. And so I'm standing back there, and we're BSing, and all of a sudden, the same thing, the PA guy, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the bare naked ladies. And Sid shoots to the front of the press box. He's probably only like 82 or 3 at the time. Shoots to the front of the press box, and I look over Dark, and Dark looks at me and says, you want to tell him or should I? He says, you tell him. So I went up, I tapped his shoulder, said, it's a rock band. Oh, and then we went back to the popcorn machine. True story. Okay, but it all had to do with rock and roll, see?
My brother George used to work backstage at the Duluth Arena.
Yeah.
And maybe the way to sum it up is what the roadie for Waylon Jennings told him.
The roadie for Waylon Jennings.
Waylon Jennings. He said, George, rock and roll is a loser's game. That's great.
Well, Eric, thanks for joining us here. Rhiannon, what was your first concert out of curiosity before I let Eric go?
Well, it's not my favorite concert experience,
and it doesn't have to be.
So I hate to qualify it that
way.
No,
but a lot of us went to that first show, and it isn't somebody, but we just went because whatever.
Yeah,
so.
And I had, let me think, I was probably about 10 years old. So, I mean, I feel lucky to kind of have that first foray at an early experience. But my older sister took me and my best friend at the time to see NSYNC when they were at the Target Center.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's
and
pretty
it
good.
Was, actually, it might have even been the Metrodome because it was so loud with screaming girls. I remember being like, we can't hear them sing.
Oh, yeah.
The Which Metrodome. Is obviously why I went to see them, you know, for their good songs.
Sure. Yeah, well, exactly. So did you become an NSYNC fan after that?
Oh, I was an NSYNC fan.
Oh, when you went
to? Yeah, absolutely.
How about your older sister taking you?
Apparently, in later years, I found out she was very hungover that day, too. And she said, I was such a good sister that I didn't cancel on you, and I took you anyways.
That's impressive.
And she canceled on a date, too, I believe. So
my older brother was a little bit significantly older than I was, I guess. I mean, you know, as far as musical taste. So we were going to Fargo, I think, or I was going to Moorhead to see my aunt, and he drove us. And at the Fargo Civic was on the billboard was the Who. They were the, and I don't know who else was opening the Who. I mean, you know, back when they smashed their instruments.
Oh wow!
And here's what my brother said to me. If I so much as even think you're there, you're going to get the crap beat out of you. I don't want to see you there. I don't want you close to there. I don't want you embarrassing me. You know, I was too scared to go to see the Who.
He talked you out of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He would have backed that up, too. I was, you know. But your sister bringing you, that's really cool.
I'm glad we could share that experience.
Yeah. I took Vivian Nelson to Elvis in 77. And because she had just broken her leg and she was the girlfriend of a photographer at Channel 3 in Duluth. And so she had a cast. And so I felt sorry for her. So we went. Years later, my at the time, probably 80-year-old mother, still with us at 95, somehow Elvis came up and she said, you know, and this is like 20 years after Elvis had appeared and I had taken Vivian Nelson. Don't you think you should have asked your mother if she wanted to see Elvis? And it never even occurred to me to ask her.
No, it wouldn't.
You know, your mom, you don't, you know.
Yeah, probably wasn't all that hip to bring mom to see Elvis.
She bears a grudge to this day.
Yeah, it's worse when your mom's mad at you as opposed to your brother, who just wants to beat you up. You know.
A lot of fun, Dave Lee. Thank you.
Eric, it's great. Brianne, this is fun. I hope we can keep doing this.
I think so. I think we got another one in the can. So
okay, well, that's awesome. Eric, thanks so much. And I know that we'll have one of these days, we're going to grab George, your brother, make you come back and chat with George a little bit and some of the concert experiences.
He'll be armed and dangerous.
And with that, Thanks for listening. Again, we're going to be doing this for a while, so we hope you join us. Probably, I'm going to guess that somebody's thinking of a great story right now, because these are things that we, for some reason, all these significant events that happen in our lives, there's certain events you remember where you were and when you went. And concerts, for whatever reason, is one of those. This is the Talk North Podcast Network.